And I believe we got down to about mid-page 266. And taking up at this paragraph, in the succeeding verses, Luke 11 to 13, Jesus unfolds the chief purpose of his homely parable. God is the householder and is more willing to give than we are to receive.
Now that's hard to believe.
I know what you mean. He never sleeps and therefore is never disturbed when we approach him. James speaks of him as the giving God in James 1 and 5. Every good and perfect gift, so forth. And satisfying our needs is one of his delights. We must, however, pray perseveringly, for the spirit of successful prayer is the spirit of persevering prayer. Now, I think I illustrated yesterday morning, for instance, a mother and a little boy go shopping. Go down just before Christmas and looking at the display of the toys and this, that, and the other there. He comes by a certain thing, Mama, I want that. And he's there and goes, Mom, I want that. And I want that. The point is, we've got to get down to the point that we pretty well decided, and when I say decided, I mean, let the Lord help us decide that issue and perseveringly keep that before him. Now, I can remember many a morning when I was in Clinton, Oklahoma. Right off of our kitchen, we lived in an old block, three-level house. We loved the old thing. It's scattered and rambled all over everywhere, but we like it. Walk out of the kitchen on a patio that actually wasn't covered. It went on, there was the garage building and all of that just south of there. But on the east end of this patio was a wall up about that high, facing the east. I couldn't recall the time when I walked out on that patio to that place, that wall. I'd love to see it again. The old house is still standing. And there, asked the Lord to do something about a school in Oklahoma. The reason was this. A lot of some of my closest preacher friends there, we don't need school in Oklahoma. Got one little rock and go over there. Yeah, they went over there and they stayed. They stayed. Well, the work in Oklahoma progressed considerably while we were battling. I was there 4 years, 2 years at Tulsa, and then we moved to school to Marlow, and I was there 2 years. I meant to make that place my life, last move. The Lord had other plans. And for a good long time I regretted leaving, but since then I can see now the hand of the Lord had to be in it. We've lost that school from what it was originally founded as, and I'm sorry, deeply sorry about that. But what I'm talking about, when there is a burden on your heart so heavy that it just won't let go. Just won't let go. Now that's exactly what he means about the spirit of successful prayer is the spirit of persevering prayer. If urgent, continuing asking prevailed with a selfish, indolent, churlish man, how much more must prayer prevail with God, who cares for us with a Father's love? Now, let me note this. Too many times when we pray, Lord, I pray for so-and-so, and I wish you'd answer yesterday. Well, now, the Lord has a time when and a place where. And just remember that he is able. Hence, our prayer should be within his will rather than in our selfish things. And very often now in this case, here is a man, had a friend came at night. He's traveling. He was hungry. He needed some bread. And he called on him and he had none. This man got up and went to somebody else and there got the bread, you see. Now very often, or shall I say, that what our prayers should be basically is that which we are in need of, and time will tell as we pray whether it's an actual need or not. But we need that with which to give. With which to give in the service of the Lord. Now, for a good long time, this problem has been on my mind. Actually, all, what is the ultimate purpose of God? Well, I think I finally found the answer. The ultimate purpose of God, we often say, is to reconcile the creation to himself through the merits of Jesus Christ. Well and good. But there's another thing that I think is primary to that. In so doing, God completely unveils himself in all of his characteristics and everything to the redeemed persons and creation otherwise. In other words, the ultimate glory of God is his purpose. And by glory we mean manifestation. That we may see and know him. And when we begin then to think about in the final glory age, as we call it, the new heavens and the new earth, and thus God tents or tabernacles with man, New Jerusalem having come down from God out of heaven, they saved the nations that walk upon the earth, new earth, walk in the light of that city. Now Abraham looked for a city. Let's just put the word civilization in place of a city there, because basically that's what it was back when men began to build cities. It was to concentrate power and so on. He looked for a city which hath foundations. He looked for a civilization which hath foundations, whose architect and builder is God. Now, ultimately, that's what's going to be. Now, as far as you and I are concerned, I think that which we need to fulfill the purpose that God has for each of us in connection with that ultimate purpose in our particular generation in which we live, we have to look to God for everything that's needed to glorify God. If you don't, we're going to have somebody walking out kind of like this old Pharisee, I thank God that I'm not like other men, and so on like that. Because all that we are and all that we'll ever be, we're that because of the grace of God, which is one of the revelations of God. Somebody asked about the problem of loving God, loving Jacob and hating Esau. And the preacher answered, said, well, I don't have much of a problem with that. Says, the problem that I have is trying to figure out how God loved Jacob. So, that's just about the way it goes, don't you see? So whenever it gets down, and too often, brethren, we get to the point sometimes God has used us, we get to the point where we think we are the indispensable person and get sold on self. God forbid. Now, that's just exactly what has happened right here with this people. We are the it. And I'm glad to see that W.A. Criswell, I read once when he's talking about all the great institutions that they had builded up in the Southern Baptist Convention. Well, he's finally come to his senses that some of those institutions they didn't need, because they're the very things that are being used to lead the whole group astray. And so now, he started a school in his own church, a church school, and the largest church in Memphis, Tennessee, likewise, has started a school in their own church. Then there's another church in Jacksonville, Florida, that has done the same thing. In other words, brethren, instead of trying to build up something big as the world looks at it and really doing the job, let's forget it. The point that we're here for is to glorify not ourselves and what we're doing or any institution that we may make. Let's just try to find our place within the will of God, and I believe that will is within the bounds of a New Testament church. And that's where it ought to be done, and God help New Testament churches today to realize the responsibility that rests upon them, instead of sometimes getting to the point that they begin to glorify themselves. Because we're here to manifest God. We are to manifest what He's done for us, is doing for us, and will do for us. Then the millennium will have further aspects of that to be shown worldwide with a purpose. The whole thing ultimately is to establish that situation for all eternity. And the ultimate purpose of that is that He might dwell with man face to face, that they may know every aspect. In other words, God is fully revealed to them to see how great He is. All right. So, if urgent, continue asking prevailed with a selfish, indolent, churlish man, how much more must prayer prevail with God, who cares for us with a Father's love? What we must guard ourselves against is reading into the parable more than Jesus intended. The friend who was aroused had to be badgered. Kind of glad he used that word, badgered there. Had to be badgered into lending the necessary bread. But God neither slumbers nor sleeps, and we do not have to force Him into giving, and He never gives what we seek reluctantly. Now, did you notice that? Let's notice that again. And He never gives what we seek reluctantly. If He does not appear to answer, we must be tireless in our approach to the mercy seat. Those who have been mighty in prayer have been those who, like Jacob, have wrestled and cried, I will not let thee go unless thou bless me. Now, I can look back, brother, and testify to the fact. I came out of high school in 1930. I had taken all the commercial subjects, bookkeeping, typing, shorthand, and so on in high school. because I realized that I wasn't going to be able to do things physically that others would do. But when I came out of school, business was so bad in the Depression that and it was slow too, that they wanted combination men, men who could do the bookkeeping as well as wait out front and so on like that. And so I never did get a job. I tried every way and I talked to the Lord every way. But finally the Lord convinced me, and right in the back of my mind, I can look at it all the back now and see it all the time. The Lord, I knew in a way what he wanted me to do. But I knew I was going to have to pay a price, and it took time for me to get to where I would pay the price. And that was this, that I just didn't want to be made fun of because of my physical handicaps. And because I would be criticized, would be misunderstood, and so on, and was, and still am. But be that as it may, it makes no difference anymore. A mountain thing, because he's given grace in spite of that fact. All right, and so finally it came, those 7 years that I waited before I finally surrendered. I will not let thee go unless thou bless me. Many were the nights when I went to sleep, my pillow was wet with tears. But remember, in a lot of our prayer, we've got to let God get us on the proper ground and the proper attitude to pray. Lord, I want you to do this my way. Now, wait a minute. That's not it. We must do it his way. All right. Arnett has this precious comment: sweet to the angel of the covenant was the persistent struggle of the believing man, and sweet to the same Lord today is the pressure which an eager supplicant applies to his heart and his hand. The Lord loves to be pressed. Now, this is something that is hard for us to understand. Let us therefore press, assured by his own word that the hearer of prayer never takes urgently ill. Says Buttrick, the strong souls of mankind have been under pressure of proving to God that their prayer was the plea of their all-controlling desire. And I think we could say here that all-controlling desire, we have to be all brought so many times in so many different ways. Down to the point, Lord, not my will, but thy will. And then it begins to open up. Such intensity in prayer is indicated by the Lord's exhortation: ask, seek, and knock. The last two imperatives repeat the meaning of the first in figurative form and give expression to what is implied in the parable. As Goebel expresses it, not ever asking, but only a patient, persevering one will be figuratively called a seeking. And in the same way, not any asking whatever, but an energetic, persistent one is denoted by knock. And if you will look in the original on that, he that keeps on seeking, he that keeps on knocking. So is denoted by knock, which standing thus absolutely and independently cannot mean a timid tapping, but only vigorous knocking. The threefold utterance of the exhortation is in itself a demand for an ever-repeated, unwearying asking. By parable and precept, Christ exhorts us to persevering, persistent prayer. If the friend who sought bread for his friend was not discouraged by a refusal, but continued to ask in ever-increasing earnestness for what he needed, how much more does it become us whom Jesus called his friends never to grow weary in presenting our petitions to God, whose fatherly love does not need, like man's precarious friendship, to be reluctantly constrained, but willingly and gladly lets itself be compelled. God does not answer our oft praying, but get rid of us, but because he loves us. And so the idea of persistent prayer means that it's come to the time that this means business. Now remember this. God, well, I was noticing the other night, Brother Bishop, he spoke here last Wednesday night, said, for instance, there are two things that God has promised us, bread and raiment. Now, I thought quite a bit about that since. I know myself, I've always had to ask God for house to live in and for transportation. And I think it's a legitimate asking because I can't provide the same any other way. There's no other way than I can. So I think what we need. But now, mind you, all of this is for what purpose? That we might, with full purpose, do let God's will be done in us. A statement in the Philippian letter. Work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. All that we can get at the cross people today, the average church member, somehow or other they think they have really done God the favor when they finally repent and are saved. Well, boy, that's it. But wait a minute. A father likes for his children to take the responsibility of children and grow up and take their place as grown-up children. Be worthwhile. Give something to life. Not ever be on the receiving end and just dissipating it and so on like that. But really being men and women who will take their place. I think sometimes if I were called upon, maybe under some circumstances, to preach another funeral, I'd want to use this as a text. He served his generation, fell asleep, or was gathered to his fathers. He served his own generation and was gathered to his fathers. Which was said of so many of the old patriarchs. And so in each generation you and I live, that's right. We'll keep on asking. But let's remember now that we need to try as much as possible to ask that which will be to the glory of God. And when I use the word glory, it means a bright shining. A bright shining means a manifestation of, a showing forth of. And that's the purpose. Showing forth of God. And not only in His attributes, but also in His very essence as love. And I think it's going to be one of the most wonderful things full revelation of God in eternity is when I can see the extent of God's love.
Luke 18:5 also tells us almost the same thing for the widow. She kept pestering the
just judge.
Unjust judge.
Yeah, right.
Almost the same situation.
Yeah.
And you said something, Mark, Bill. We need that with which we can give. There's a lot in that.
Oh, yeah. Right.
We really need. What we really need is with that which we can give. Mm-hmm.
That which we can give. Here was the man. He was in need of bread. He called on somebody, and the man was out. But the man went and got some bread from someone who had the bread. And let me note something else, brethren. I very often tell you that I think it's always be searching out to know God better and to know more about Him. Now you see, I said know Him better personally and know about Him. As we grow in grace and in knowledge, there will always be areas that rise, oh, I wish I could know a little more about that. Where that desire is sincere and so on, I believe that God will providentially answer your prayer. Now, you've heard me mention the fact that it's my conviction. Now, you don't have to take what my conviction is, but it's my conviction that when God completes the calling out in this age of His church, when He completes that, He's going to glorify that church. Get her ready to be on hand when Christ comes to the earth to stop mankind from wiping mankind off the face of the earth. And in that way, the devil could whip God. But we want to keep knowing a little more and more about it in order that we might tell others. Well, the other day, well, that one particular thing. We have it in Acts 15. It's clear to me that after this has been done, sure. After this has been done in this age, and it's brought out clearly in Acts 15, when James said that all the prophets prophesied, but this is the way it's going to be. Jew and Gentile is going to be gathered together in the church. I'm talking about the institution, New Testament time. After having done this, He's going to reestablish the throne of David. But that's going to be for a purpose. And that is that the residue of men, in other words, God has dealt with man now for about 6,000 years. He's going to deal with him for one more 1,000 years that we know is the millennium. That the residue of the tail end of mankind might seek after the Lord, and in the millennium there will be conditions much more favorable to believe that people being saved than they are today. But now, all of that is for what? Where will the saved out of the millennial reign be in the eternal ages? Where comes the nations of them that are saved walking upon that new earth. Where did they come from? Okay, I've been looking for something for some time that where someone else had seen that. The other day I came over here, last Friday I believe it was, went down to the bookstore. And this was the only book of this kind that was in there. I picked it up and I got looking over here, The Future Life. And I looked through here and I found a sentence where the man more or less said what I had been thinking, that the saved of the millennium will be the saved nations that will dwell on the new earth in the eternal ages, that will walk in the light of the eternal city, the abode of God and His glorified church. Glory. Now notice, brethren, if you will, you will have God, a glorified church, and a glorified earth with a glorified nation. Trinity. Complete in all of it, in complete harmony with God. Now the thing I'm trying to say is that I believe if we want to know some things, we may get a little impatient sometimes, but in God's own way, in God's good time, somehow He may lead us into that which will